The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Hello, wackos. Wow, that was my first time. I was distracted last week, and that was my first time seeing the new intro with just so much footage of me. I surprisingly did not dictate, and that is the word I use for myself. I did not dictate how that was created. Alec did that all on his own. Our old producer, Alec, shout out, love to him, living a better life somewhere outside of New York City. God bless. God bless. Thoughts and prayers to you in a positive way, because you really made it. Wow. That was stunning. I liked when my face burned in flames. That was pretty cool. So somehow we've managed to incorporate the CD cover for Midnights. And it is, I think it's safe to say no one really has CDs anymore, but it was the shape of a CD. So I liked that, kind of a nod to my age. I'm doing what they do in art school, which is like reading way too much into something, when in reality it's probably just someone smoked a joint and put a lot of photos together. But I loved it. Thank you so much. That was beautiful. All right, guys. What a week. It's Thanksgiving week. So I'm just gonna do this solo. Obviously, we have Mike and Natalie in the booth. I didn't want to drag anyone into this on the holiday week. And maybe, you know what, maybe I won't. Maybe this is just my show now. Honestly, very relaxing to do a show alone. I've never done a podcast by myself. Don't hate it. I don't hate it. Some of you hate it, but honestly, not a lot. Not a lot. The drop-off wasn't significant enough for me to be worried, since I really don't make money from this show anyway. We're just here because we love the news. We love the news, and we love sitting in the house that Luis J. Gomez built. That's really my commitment to the arts. and just making hard eye contact with Mike, as sometimes I'm trying to read what you're thinking in your head through your eyes, but I don't feel like we know each other well enough. We almost do, but not exactly, because sometimes you're not thinking what I think you're thinking.
Yeah, don't do that.
Oh, okay. What does that mean?
No, I just have there's not a lot of thoughts going on back here.
Seinfeld said that. And that's one of the first things I learned about men from stand-up comedy. Because Seinfeld has a joke in, I'm telling you for the last time, where he's like, you know, women always want to know what men are thinking. And he's like, I'll tell you. The answer is nothing. We're just walking around, looking around. And as a girl in high school, I got to say that really cleared a lot of things up for me. And then followed by a bit Steve Byrne did, where he said that women are looking for true love and men can fall in love, like with the popcorn girl on the way backstage at a concert. It's just whoever they bump into. And I was like, that also clarified so fucking much for me. And those two bits explain why I am the way I am, I suppose. Do you have any stand-up bits that explain why you are the way you are?
Oh, there's so many. Most of them are Mitch Hedberg, and I do them a disservice repeating them.
Well, I mean, when I repeat jokes, I try not to make them funny. Some would say I do that with my own as well. I'll just beat you to the punchline there. But I just kind of use them as like little, you know, like memes or like a inspirational magnet. You know, like you weren't walking alone. I carried you, like footsteps in the sand, kind of things.
Seinfeld is your like a Jesus Proverbs. You pray love.
I was so obsessed with I'm Telling You for the Last Time. I knew that album front to back. That was the album I would sit in my room and listen to before I was a stand up. I know that album so well that when I was living in New Jersey, if I had a migraine headache, I would turn the lights off and put that on, and it would help my headache go away because it was like I didn't have to think about it because it was so soothing because I knew everything that was going on. That's how much I love that album. So, and I got to finally meet Seinfeld last week, actually.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I know. Full circle. I had been close to Seinfeld before, but I had never been able to meet him. I was sitting next to Bill Burr when Seinfeld dropped in at West Side Comedy Club, and Bill Burr turned to me and was like, "Holy shit, Seinfeld!" and I'm like, "Holy shit, Bill Burr!" And then yeah, last week I did the Zoom show with Kyle Dunnigan and Kurt Metzger. Shout out! Thanks for having me. And Seinfeld was on, and Kurt goes to me, "Yeah, it's like the real Seinfeld, like not like Kyle Dunnigan doing Seinfeld," because you know Kyle Dunnigan does all these impressions. And I was like, "All right, we'll see, I guess." And then, yeah, Seinfeld just zooming in from his own fucking house. You hear his kid in the background, and just what I was just like, "This is great. This is so cool." And I told him about Guys We Fucked, and he laughed. And it's kind of like, you know, Seinfeld is not like a big laugher at people he doesn't know, so.
That rules.
I'm just happy. I'm just happy when I can make someone that I've looked up to know that Guys We Fucked exists. I didn't even try to say, because he was like, "What is everyone else here in the Zoom do?" It was like six of us. And I didn't even try to say that I was a stand-up. I was like, "That's going to go in one ear, out the other." I was like, "I have a famous podcast called Guys We Fucked." And he was like, "Huh?" Because I know, like, that's what the name does. It goes, makes you go, "Huh?"
Yeah, that just sticks in your brain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was like, sometimes people try to give too much information. You got to give one thing and let it stick. That Guys We Fucked, the title is my business card. So that was my week in comedy. Other than that, just been bouncing around. There's some young men outside filming something. It's always interesting to me what shows up on the Gas Digital YouTube channel every week. Footage of this week, someone was nice enough to point out, in last week's Without a Country episode, the place where you need to go to see my breast almost come out of my shirt. So I just want to thank the wacko who did that. It's so funny because they just put the timestamp, and without even clicking on the timestamp, I knew it had something to do with my tit popping out. And then I clicked it, and sure enough, it was my tit almost popping out. And I was like, you know what? These Gas Digital subscribers are nothing if not completely predictable. But there was no nip. I was like, Jesus. I was like, if Mike and Natalie didn't tell me that a nip came out, someone's heads will roll. Yeah.
Trust me, Corinne, I am eagle eye. If it ever pops out, I will let you know.
You know what? That's the thing. I was like, my nipple can't have popped out because Mike would have had that as his screensaver on his phone already. Or should I say my phone? Because Mike has my old phone. Oh, my goodness. All right. What a tangled web we weave here at the Gas Digital Network. Anyway, so if you're listening to this on Tuesday, happy pre-Thanksgiving. If you're listening to this on Saturday or a day after, happy post-Thanksgiving. I don't know what you're doing. I just want to let you guys know, if you don't have New Year's Eve plans yet, I am back to hosting my pretty much yearly show at New York Comedy Club East Village. I usually do like a New Year's Eve pregame. It's a 6 p.m. show, so you can come, have some drinks, have some laughs, get off the last, you know, bit of rage from 2022, and then move into 2023, tabula rasa, clean slate. It's going to be such a good show. It's Corinne Fisher's Morbid New Year's Eve, if they let me call it that. That's what I submitted, but it's comics telling fucked up jokes about the most fucked up shit that happened to them during 2022, so we can kind of get that out of our systems and then, again, yeah, go into the new year cleansed. And so far on the lineup, we have me, obviously, Christina Hutchinson, Ryan Long, Lev Furr, and a couple other people. I'm only booking people that I want to spend New Year's with. It's pretty it's pretty transparent, but I don't care. So join us for that. The tickets will be up soon. I don't think they're up yet, but just hold New Year's Eve, okay? This is the most ahead of time I've ever planned a New Year's Eve ever in my fucking life. And that's because I've gotten older and I've realized nothing incredible is going to happen. No one's going to kick down the door and go, Corinne, you're right. I'm madly in love with you. And I've been waiting for this moment to tell you. So now I just book work for myself. Okay. Is it sad? Maybe. But also, is it realistic? And do the New Year's turn out better? Also that. All right. This week as enemy of the state is unexpected. It's Jamie Lee Curtis, everybody. It's Jamie Lee Curtis.
Of the state.
I didn't think I was going to have to do this, but there was a lot more Amber Heard, Johnny Depp news this week. And I'm not going to read the whole Fandom Wire article. There is a Fandom Wire article, though. But basically, Johnny Depp's fans are calling Jamie Lee Curtis a hero because she posted a picture of Johnny Depp, not even with Johnny Depp, just a photo of Motley Crue. The title was Motley Crue Redux with fucking Johnny Depp. I mean, looking like a haggard Muppet. And she posted this picture. And of course, some people got really mad and they're like, she faces intense backlash. I'm like, did she really? I don't know. It said the post annoyed the fans as many of them trolled her for supporting Depp, which is good because that's not always been the case. According to them, Jamie Lee Curtis has shown her support for domestic abuse through this post. And I mean, I gotta agree because, like, okay, you're not even in the picture. So, like, you don't have to post a picture of Amber Heard with a heart around her face. But also you can just, like, there is something about posting a photo in right now of Johnny Depp, especially when you're a celebrity, especially when you're a female celebrity, that's just saying, I don't give a fuck. And overall, that's Jamie Lee Curtis's attitude. That she's taken on. And I'm sure, you know, being a woman in the business this long, she's been through a lot of things. But right now, bitch, you're acting like a pick me girl. And it's sad to see. And it's especially sad to see when you're 63 years old. And I do have some sympathy because, I mean, I can only imagine how, like, disposable you feel at 63 years of age in the entertainment business as a woman, even though she is gorgeous, not that that matters, and extremely talented and part of one of probably, I don't have the numbers here, but, like, definitely one of the most lucrative horror franchises of all time, if not the most lucrative. I'm thinking, like, Saw or something might have had more money just because of the time period that it came out. And that being said, it's just, like, it's so disappointing to see shit like this because you could have just not said anything, you know? This is like an extra slap in the face. This is like when you're down and someone kicks you. That's how I feel about that. And listen, we know the latest Halloween Ends, the 13th installment of the franchise did not do well. It wasn't a good film. And Halloween, the original Halloween, is my favorite fucking movie of all time. So if I'm saying that, that's pretty bad. It's pretty, pretty bad. But that's the story there. And yeah, of course, there's some women tweeting Jamie Lee Curtis is a queen. And those are the same women who, after Rihanna talked about Chris Brown, tweeted, I'd still fuck him. And I hate you all. And you'll get yours. That sounds like a curse. Like, I'm just, like, putting a curse on all of you. I wish. I don't deal in black magic. So you're lucky. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers professional counseling done securely online. So if you feel like there's something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals, definitely check out BetterHelp. Yeah, I mean, you guys know that a lot of people I know need therapy. I am in therapy. I love online therapy because I can't imagine having to go to yet another random destination during the course of my week. But I genuinely look forward to therapy because, I mean, just think of it as shit talking that makes you a better person, not a worse person. Doesn't that sound fun? Doesn't that sound like a fun sell? Whatever you're dealing with, BetterHelp has a wide range of counselors available for you. Plus, BetterHelp is more affordable than offline counseling, and financial aid is available, and it's very easy to get started. Please don't let money be the reason that you don't take care of your mental health. Once you sign up, BetterHelp will match you with your own licensed professional therapist who you'll be able to communicate with in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online, and BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so it's easy and free to switch counselors if needed. You can send a message to your counselor at any time, and you'll get a timely and thoughtful response. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so it's the perfect way to do therapy during, a time when we are busy and we need to stay in our own houses because we don't have time to go take an Uber or get in the car or do anything else to add anything else to our busy schedule. So you're going to go to BetterHelp.com/WAC to join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. New testimonials from users are posted daily. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. Again, go to BetterHelp.com/WAC. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/WAC, as in without a country, to get 10% off your first month. One more time, that's BetterHelp.com/WAC for 10% off your first month. Now, back to the show. The first article of Girl, let's move on to obviously the news that we were waiting on last week. Donald Trump, Donald J. Trump? There's something, it's always a bad sign when someone has J as the middle initial. So Donald J. Trump officially has announced his that he's running for president, which we knew was coming. We were just kind of waiting for the actual moment. And in an interesting turn of events, the New York Post completely fucking shaded him. The article, so I don't know if you guys saw like the post the day after he announced that he's running, but it was like a headline about something else and then very small at the bottom as like a runner underneath. And I couldn't find a picture of it again because it's not what it actually, you know, the title of the article digitally, but it said Florida man makes announcement because he made the announcement from his Mar-a-Lago estate. And that was like a real sick burn. You know, New York Post kind of known for its edgy posts, its edgy covers. The cover I talk a lot about where they publish the cover with the guy about to be hit by the subway train instead of someone helping him. That's the one that has burned my mind and haunts me and really made me rethink media in general and how evil they are. But to New York Post credit, that was a hilarious thing to do. Not the subway thing, the Florida man makes announcement thing. So Florida man makes announcement, and then you go into the article. It says low energy bruise Trump 2024 announcement gets panned on Twitter. Again, he's like, late into his 70s. He's into his 70s. So, I mean, what do we expect here? Former President Donald Trump's long anticipated launch of his 2024 White House campaign drew strong reactions Tuesday, with conservatives and liberals alike expressing dismay. Donald Trump failed America, read a message posted from President Biden's personal account during the 76-year-old Trump's Mar-a-Lago address. The 79-year-old president's tweet included a video blasting his predecessor's record on the economy, healthcare, and women's rights, and also accusing Trump of coddling extremists and inciting a violent mob on January 6, 2021. The president himself was attending a mangrove tree planting ceremony as part of the G20 summit in Bali, Indonesia, when a reporter asked if he had any reaction to Trump throwing his hat in the ring. Not really, Biden responded before turning back to the mangroves. The conservative publication National Review, which opposed Trump during the 2016 GOP primary, quickly posted an editorial headlined simply "No," and leading with an eye-catching quote purportedly by one of the most famous French Enlightenment philosophers. To paraphrase Voltaire, after he attended an orgy, "Once was an experiment, twice would be perverse," began the piece. That's how I feel about sex clubs, but I did go twice in one weekend, which went on to describe the former president as bruised by recent election defeats, as well as monumentally selfish and morally and electorally compromised. I mean, it's interesting to see that basically across the board, everyone agrees that Ron DeSantis is the much stronger choice for the Republican nomination. And but it's hilarious for them to be calling like Trump immoral for running, because God help us if Ron DeSantis gets elected. Trump's announcement tonight is just the kickoff of what will be a messy Republican primary, with candidates competing to be the most extreme MAGA Republican in the race. The DNC will be ready for them all, Democratic National Committee Chairman Jamie Harrison said on Twitter following Trump's announcement. David Axelrod, director of the University of Chicago School of Institute of Politics and former President Barack Obama's campaign manager and top advisor, called the speech low energy aside from Trump's shots at his successor. The Democratic strategist also observed what he believed was a jab at Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, whom Trump has repeatedly attacked since last week's midterms, though he did not mention his would-be rival by name Tuesday, which I think is a good move. Not a task for a conventional politician. This is a task for a movement. Talking about you. DeSantis, Axelrod said. Axelrod's low energy comment was echoed by Jeb Bush Jr., the son of the former Florida governor and Trump's vanquished 2016 rival. Oh my God, I forgot who even his rival was in 2016. That was so long ago, and so much has happened since then. Wow, what a low energy speech by the Donald. Time for new leaders, Jeb Jr. tweeted, adding the hashtags weak and sleepy Donnie. Okay, so we're just reusing the same ones we used for Biden. Cute. Even as a detractor, I had to admit that one thing Trump had going for him was he spoke, but you never really saw a 70-something-year-old man, judged Real Clear Politics election analyst Sean Trendy said. Tonight, he really looked like a 70-something-year-old man. However, the reviews were not universally negative. Senator Lindsey Graham, that ogre, a Trump ally, said the former president will be hard to beat if he runs on the remarks he delivered Tuesday night. If President Trump continues this tone and delivers this message on a consistent basis, he will be hard to beat. His speech tonight, contrasting his policies and results against the Biden administration, charts a winning path for him in the primaries and general election, Graham said on Twitter. As we listen to President Trump remind us of what is possible regarding our borders, economy, and national security, it is my hope that he will continue to focus on the solutions that he offered tonight to restore a broken America, he added. I mean, he broke it more. Trump spoke for more than an hour at his Mar-a-Lago resort and residence in Palm Beach, Florida. He was joined by his wife, Melania, can't believe that's still happening, son-in-law, and former White House senior advisor Jared Kushner, and sons Eric and Barron. So yeah, we knew it was happening. If you thought it wasn't happening, you have not been paying attention for, I don't know, the past, 2 years. It was very obvious that he was going to run again. The man hates losing. He wants as much power as he can have. He already got through one term as president, and he's like, I'll just phone in another one. Like, it really doesn't matter. I gotta say, though, with all these like public slams of him, the fact that he was off Twitter so long, the fact that he is appearing older now, which, you know, people absolutely hate in society, especially America, and the fact that there is a really, really strong additional contender in Ron DeSantis, I just don't see this happening for him this time. And there's like a weird little part of me that's sad for him. I don't know. He's so fucking pathetic. There's a little part in my heart that feels sad. I think I did too much work on self this year. So that's that. Good to know. It's kind of just like good that it's out in the open now, because I was just anticipating it for so long that I wanted to see how it was welcomed by society. Honestly, not that much talk about it. I feel like we talked about it for one day. The New York Post headline was pretty funny, and then that was it. Anyone I talked to agreed that they thought Ron DeSantis was a much bigger problem and that we should be much more worried about that, which is great because, you know, things do get worse. And just when you think that things are as bad as they possibly could be, know that they could get even worse, which is perfect right now as my computer quits on me. I wish I could sing, because this would be a really good time to just like sing a little song as I redo my computer. Can you bring up the next article, the Alabama article on the screen? I don't know what the hell it is about the internet here. Something always happens while I'm live streaming. Okay, anyway, I got it. Alabama is pausing executions after a third failed lethal injection. You guys know I'm adamantly against the death penalty, and so I always like to cover any stories that make it look bad. And that's my bias, guys. That's my bias. This is from NPR. I don't think that fucking conservative outlets would even give a shit that something went wrong during a lethal injection. I didn't see anything about this anywhere else except for NPR, which is like really, really bleeding heart liberal. So Birmingham, Alabama, Alabama Governor Kay Ivey sought a pause in executions and ordered a top to bottom review of the state's capital punishment system Monday after an unprecedented third failed lethal injection. What is going on? Ivey's office issued a statement saying she had both asked Attorney General Steve Marshall to withdraw a motion seeking execution dates for two inmates and requested that the Department of Corrections undertake a full review of the state's execution process. Ivey also requested that Marshall not seek additional execution dates for any other death row inmates until the review is complete. The move followed the uncompleted execution Thursday of Kenneth Eugene Smith, which was the state's second such instance of being unable to put an inmate to death in the past 2 months, and its third since 2018. The state completed an execution in July, but only after a three-hour delay caused at least partly by the same problem with starting an IV line. Denying that prison officials or law enforcement are to blame for the problems, Ivy said legal tactics and criminals hijacking the system are at play here. For the sake of the victims and their families, we've got to get this right, she said. Corrections Commissioner John Hamm said the department is fully committed to the review and is confident that we can get this done right. Everything is on the table from our, including the fucking body. That's like, what a quote to put in when they have the like execution table as the main picture. Anyway, everything is on the table from our legal strategy in dealing with last minute appeals to how we train and prepare to the order and timing of events on execution day to the personnel and equipment involved, Hamm said in a statement issued through the governor's office. Marshall read the governor's and commissioner's comments with interest and will have more to say on this at a later date, said Mike Lewis, a spokesman for the attorney general. And I mean, this, you know, some of the conversation here reminds me of, God, the documentary that I think that Shane and I watched quite some time ago, but talking about the mental health, not only like the problem with playing God here with us deciding who gets executed and who does it, but also the mental health and the trauma experienced by the person who has to administer the lethal injection, because it's not the fucking people making the decision or making these laws that has to do it. That's for sure. It's the same as like when people make a decision that we're going to war. Their kids aren't going to war. They're not going to war. The Death Penalty Information Center, an anti-death penalty group with a large database on executions, said no other state other than Alabama has had to halt an execution in progress since 2017, when Ohio halted Alva Campbell's lethal injection because workers couldn't find a vein. The executive director of the organization, Robert Dunham, said Ivy was right to seek an investigation and a pause, but any review of the system needs to be done by someone other than the state's prison system. While Ivy blamed defense efforts for execution failures, Dunham said her willful blindness to the prison system's woes were part of the problem. The Alabama Department of Corrections has a history of denying and bending the truth about its execution failures, and it cannot be trusted to meaningfully investigate its own incompetence and wrongdoing, he said. Earlier this year, after Tennessee Governor Bill Lee halted a lethal injection in April because he learned the drugs hadn't been tested as required, he ordered an independent investigation and paused all executions through the end of the year. Alabama's execution of Joe Nathan James Jr. took several hours to get underway in July because of problems establishing an IV line, leading anti-death penalty group Reprieve U.S. Forensic Justice Initiative to claim the execution was botched. I would also argue, I mean, this is just human torture at this point. Like, can you imagine? It's like you're waiting to like get lethal injection. And I'm not saying these people didn't torture their victims, but you know, I don't subscribe to an eye for an eye. Otherwise, a lot of bitches in my life would be dead. Just kidding. That was a small joke. Have to do it because Shane's not here. In September, the state called off the scheduled execution of Alan Eugene Miller because of difficulty accessing his veins. Miller said in a court filing that prison staff poked him with needles for more than an hour. And like, you know, this is true because, you know, when you go to Quest Diagnostics, they can barely find a vein. So I can only imagine who's poking a needle in your arm when you're getting executed. And they're like, well, they're going to die anyway. And at one point left him hanging vertically on a gurney before announcing they were stopping. Prison officials have maintained the delays were the result of the state carefully following procedures. Ivy asked the state to withdraw motions seeking execution dates for Miller and James Edward Barber, the only two death row inmates with such requests before the Alabama Supreme Court. Alabama in 2018 called off the execution of Doyle Ham because of problems getting the intravenous line connected. Ham had damaged veins because of lymphoma, hepatitis, and past drug use, his lawyer said. Ham later died in prison of natural causes. Alabama should have imposed an execution moratorium after Ham's failed execution for the benefit of everyone, said Bernard Harcourt, an attorney who represented Ham for years. As a political matter, Governor Ivey mentions only the victims, but these botched executions have been ordeals for the men on the gurney, their families, friends, ministers, and attorneys, and all the men and women working at the prison and involved in these botched attempts. The trauma of these executions extend widely to everyone that they touch, Harcourt said, which is absolutely true. I mean, it's not like a machine is doing this. We're not just thinking of this, you know, criminal. And also, we love to call, you know, just everyone fucking criminals. I also want to look up the legality of, like, if the lethal injection doesn't work, do you still have to die? Like, I feel like there would be some law about, like, damn it. Like, what happens if it doesn't work? Like, if like, it doesn't work, is that supposedly, like, divine intervention? I could see someone having made a law like that. I don't know. Can you look that up, Mike? Natalie, anyone who wants...
I'm currently checking on it.
Oh, okay. Oh my God, these numbers are pretty bad. I looked up on the Death Penalty Information Center, botched executions. These numbers are not great. So botched... What the fuck is this?
Corinne.
What?
That goes all the way back to 1890.
So?
That means, like, that's literally when they were hanging people in because of gold prospector.
Yeah, I know, but arguments. The hanging should have definitely worked. That seems like the easiest
You've
one.
You've never seen a Western? There's always some guy who comes by and shoots the rope out.
Oh, I mean, that's not a documentary, Michael.
I don't know. I've seen them horses. There's no way they could fake that.
The only one that has a 100% perfection rate is Firing Squad.
And they just voted to bring that back in some states.
Are you serious?
Yes.
That is so fucking... Oh, my
That's
God.
That's the most humane one.
Well, it's humane for the people administering it because you don't know whose bullet actually killed the person, but it's certainly not humane for the person getting killed.
You have eight marksmen
aiming
at your heart. Somebody's going to hit a clean shot. You're going to go out. You're barely going to feel it.
That, can you imagine the absolute terror you would feel? I am sorry. There's nothing that will ever... The only one that is like kind of okay, I guess, is lethal injection if we have to pick the best of all the evils. But I am adamantly against the death penalty.
You have to slowly feel your body die around you? That sounds... Like a fate. That's horrible.
No, I feel like you would kind of like knock out. The body does
Firing
a lot
squad.
Too. South Carolina, Oklahoma, Mississippi, Utah are doing the return of Firing Squad. Oh my God. But apparently Utah remains the only state that has actually used the method in the last century, which, I mean, having been there and shot a gun there really checks out. Gotta be honest.
Also, the most failed execution attempts is with lethal injection.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I'm against the whole thing. I'm against the whole thing.
That one seems miserable.
I don't think, like, sitting... And also, for Firing Squad, what's the setup of a Firing Squad? What is the... Oh, I would love to hear from someone. If anyone knows someone who was killed by the death penalty, let me know. I mean, that's like statistically pretty slim that someone's listening, but I would. Or if anyone knows someone who has had to administer it, oh my God, I would be so interested in talking to you about capital punishment. Do they have a picture? All right, execution by firing squad in the past, sometimes called fusillating is a method of capital punishment particularly common in the military and in times of war, composed of several soldiers who fire simultaneously. Yeah, the shooters are typically instructed to aim at the heart. I was just wondering if they're always facing forward. I know they're blindfolded or hooded as well as restrained, but I didn't know. I thought sometimes they're like they're facing the other way, which to me seems even fucking worse.
I have an image here from war.
Right. That's from the Wikipedia one. But the guy's facing forward, but he's hooded, correct? That's what it looks like from this angle.
Some of them. That guy just looks like, oh, these two guys look like they're wearing hats.
But they're multiple people. Maybe it's their fucking choice. I don't know. I feel like I would like to see it. I feel like the when you lose one of your senses, it makes everything worse. As far as like terror and stuff, because it, you know, this is the closest I have that I can get to it, but I went to this haunted house where they were using real world terrors and it had like some Al Qaeda vibes, and they put a bag over our heads, like a cloth bag over our heads, and it was fucking terrifying. That was like the only haunted house that actually ever scared me, because it was like a real world horror they weren't incorporating, and I was like, I don't like this. I was like, how about a monster or something? Okay. So that's where we're at with Alabama. Again, it's really never from a surprising state. All right, moving on to Amber Heard news of the week. This keeps popping up. There's two articles I wanted to kind of go over, because, you know, this is, you know, I've damaged relationships, lost fans over this, and I'm not stopping because I'm right. I'm just right. National feminist organizations break their silence on Amber Heard in an open letter of support. This is from NBC News. The letter denounces the rising misuse of defamation lawsuits to silence people who report domestic and sexual abuse. And I think this is really, really applies to a lot of things we talk about on this show, because, you know, defamation and cancel culture, very similar. And it's kind of like what I talk about when people are accused of like rape, and then they're like, man, this cancel culture. And you're like, okay, you were accused of a crime. That's like you're not being canceled. That's very different than like using a word that's not politically appropriate in your stand-up set. More than 130 people, including Gloria Steinem, shout out, been to your house, didn't meet you, but your house was cool, and organizations in the field of women's rights advocacy and domestic violence and sexual assault awareness have signed an open letter to support Amber Heard, who lost a defamation suit this year brought by her ex-husband Johnny Depp for an op-ed in which she said she was a public figure representing domestic abuse. The letter, and you can click on it, will I read it? Yeah, it's really short. I'll read it in a second. The letter. No, I lost the article. Fuck me.
I have it on screen.
No, it's okay. The letter, which was exclusively shared with NBC News ahead of its public release Wednesday, was signed by groups like the National Organization for Women, the National Women's Law Center. I like that one. Equality Now and the Women's March Foundation. Like that one less. The Women's March Foundation cracks me up because it's like they're almost a parody of themselves. Like, if you know anything about the Women's March Foundation, like there's always infighting. They're always getting in like little cat fights before brunch. It's a bad look. It's a bad look, and I can't support them. But we tried.
No wonder you hate the one that involves exercise.
Okay, that doesn't work anymore. Look how good I look. Look at this fucking arm. Look at it. Someone almost fell off their chair this week because I looked so good. Not you, but someone. It was written by a group of people who identify as domestic violence survivors and supporters of Heard. Heard filed a brief last month laying the groundwork to appeal a 7-person jury's decision in Virginia's Fairfax County Circuit Court to award Depp $10 million in compensatory, is that how you say it? Compensatory. Okay, you know what, in damages, and $5 million in punitive damages in June. Heard, who had countersued, was awarded $2 million in damages, but in compensation damages. I hate, like, some just tenses of words just won't come out of my mouth. You guys know some words I just can't say, but nothing in punitive damages. Although the Washington Post essay never mentioned Depp by name, Depp's attorney said it indirectly referred to allegations Heard made against him during their 2016 divorce. During the trial, she testified in graphic terms about a sexual assault she alleged. So we know all this. And this goes on and on about what we already know. But a spokesperson for the group behind the letter, who asked to remain anonymous because of the online harassment she has faced for posting in support of Heard, which makes me think it's someone maybe like Eve Barlow or someone, said she believes that after the trial, individuals were afraid to speak out because they saw what was happening to the few who had. And I mean, I'm less involved in it. And we saw... I lost literally hundreds of followers. If you search my name on Twitter, it's like people just talking smack about me, being like, I can't support her, she supports abuse. It's like, no, you're a dumb cunt. Pick me, girl. The letter, is that abuse? The letter says the ongoing online harassment of Heard and her supporters was fueled by disinformation, misogyny, biphobia, and a monetized social media environment where a woman's allegations of domestic violence and sexual assault were mocked for entertainment. And I mean, I think that last one is the one that we saw just go fucking wild. And this is not this, like, that last one is one you can't dispute. The TikTok has the numbers. They have the receipts, as the kids say. The vilification and harassment of Heard and her supporters were unprecedented in both vitriol and scale, the letter says. Kathy Spiller, maybe it's Spillar, but Spiller is hilarious. The executive director of the Feminist Majority Foundation said her organization signed the letter after it observed what she called a growing backlash against women who speak out against perpetrators of sexual assault, domestic violence, and intimate partner violence. Which, of course, because, you know, they all these meninists or whatever fucking needed was one, domestic abuse case that they could really dispute, that they could really sink their teeth into. And then that opens the gates to being able to dispute kind of anything that a woman says. And that's not to say that women have never lied. No one's saying that. And everyone goes, but I know a story about a woman who lied. Yeah, bitch, me too. Okay, that's not what we're talking about here. If this can happen to Amber Heard, it will discourage other women from speaking up and even filing reports about domestic violence and sexual assault. Justin Silver, hello. He's peeking through the window at the worst time. He has no idea what I'm talking about, and his name is just going to be interjected into this conversation, and then we're going to clip it up. The letter says the verdict and the online response to Heard indicate a fundamental misunderstanding of intimate partner and sexual violence and how survivors respond to it. In addition to two dozen feminist organizations, more than 90 domestic violence experts and survivors advocates from around the world signed the letter to condemn the public shaming of Amber Heard and join in support of her. They include doctors, lawyers, professors, authors, and activists. Others who signed the letter echoed their concerns that reaction to the trial on social media was harmful to everyday victims of domestic violence. I mean, again, the fact that we aired this trial and that you guys all think that watching two episodes of Special Victims Units with your hand down your pants made you a fucking lawyer was wild. They see, like, I mean, the amount of people that said to me, you didn't watch the trial. Yeah, you watched it with your dumb, stupid, regular person mind. They see in the environment that this has created and they feel even less safe than before to come forward and speak out about the abuse they suffered, said Elizabeth Tang, the senior counsel for education and workplace justice at the National Women's Law Center. Tang said abusers can use defamation suits to silence their victims. And again, very similar things that we saw in the Woody Allen, Mia Farrow case, or as retaliation against their victims for speaking out. Tang said that among the reasons we felt it was very important to join this letter are that when courts do not dismiss these defamation suits in early stages, it creates a lot of trauma for victims to have to go through a very long, drawn out and invasive process just to prove that the things they said are true or that they did not defame the person they reported. Christian F. Nunez, the national president of the National Organization for Women, said she hopes the letter is a reminder that the court system should never be used to strong-arm victims to recant statements about their abuse. We cannot silence victims by using courts and lawsuits as a way to re-traumatize them, because this is what's happening. And I mean, if you're quite, you know, people like to say, why didn't you go to the police? Why didn't you take it to court? Have you, as a woman or a woman you know, ever tried to report some instance of domestic violence or sexual abuse to the police? And then come back to me and let me know how that went for them, because I'm guessing not great. She said she hopes the letter raises awareness of new tactics some abusers use against their victims, such as social media campaigns. And I've seen this used against men, too. So do not. I've seen social media campaigns used against men as well. But I'm just saying it's a lot more the numbers game is a lot more against women. And quite honestly, unless it involves like Taylor Swift or Beyonce, men are just better at trolling online. They just have a fucking flair for it, you know? So a lot of people like to say, you know, a lot of feminists like to say men are useless. Men aren't good at anything. I would say you guys are fucking number one in trolling women online. So great job. Since the trial, there has been more public support for Heard on social media. The spokesperson for the group behind the letter said, she and other anonymous Heard supporters had been working to combat disinformation for months when they joined for the Open Letter Initiative. Experts said they had a unanimous message they hoped to send survivors who read the letter. It's also a way to speak to all survivors and to tell them you are not alone, Tang said. We got to get some new catchphrases here. Because anyone who's lived life knows you're very alone. It has nothing to do with that you're a survivor of sexual assault. We're all very alone. You exist alone and you will die alone. And maybe you'll find some, you know, friends to link arms with along the way. Happy Thanksgiving. So this is the letter, an open letter in support of Amber Heard. 5 months ago, the verdict in a defamation trial between Johnny Depp and Amber Heard deeply concerned many professionals in the fields of intimate partner and sexual violence. I would have put Amber's name first. I thought this was a feminist letter. As many, including A.O. Scott for the New York Times, have noted, the vilification of Ms. Heard and ongoing online harassment of her and those who have voiced support for her have been unprecedented in both vitriol and scale. Much of this harassment was fueled by disinformation. Oh, so they this is the same thing that we read in the article. I didn't realize they just pieced it up like that because I didn't read this letter yet. All right, whatever. But we already read it. But you can read it again. It's amberopenletter.com if you want to read it all together. Then you can also see everyone who signed it, all the organizations who put their mark on it. Some look made up, like the Mary Sue, but I don't know. Maybe it's a big organization, never heard of it. And then a bunch of
a website.
The Mary Sue. I love that you know about this. I feel like there's so many organizations. What if we all just work together?
It's like a derogatory movie term that they're taking it back.
Oh, really? Is that like a girl, like a term for like a girl who's like stupid and like doesn't know anything? Like a.
The opposite. It's a term for like a. Slut? A girl who's too good. She knows everything. She can do everything. She's a deus ex machina because she's a girl in a movie.
I went to film school. I never even heard that. A type of female character who is depicted as unrealistically lacking in flaws or weaknesses. She was not a strong woman so much as an insufferable Mary Sue. I don't understand how lacking flaws or weaknesses would be insufferable. People have such a lack of self-esteem. It's completely wild how it trickles into our everyday life and language.
I think it's less of like a real life thing and more of like it's lazy writing to have one character who's completely flawless.
Right. But I feel like people watching that do find it insufferable. And I go, aspirational. I do. Everyone just feels so bad about themselves, and it's like they think it's actually just so gross, and I feel so sad for you. And like they get so mad at people who are trying to like be better. It's just fucking read a fucking self-help book and take some vitamins. So that is part one of that. And then another update, and this was like from not even 24 hours ago. I caught this one on TMZ. Which I don't love to go to TMZ. That's an absolute garbage website, but sometimes they just get the scoop fastest. But by the way, before I forget, rest in peace to the Green Ranger. Okay, I don't know if you guys know, he completed suicide. I believe his child year prior had killed themselves. I don't know if it's a girl or a guy. But that's fucking sad. I learned that information during my Terrifier and Terrifier 2 double feature on Sunday. Rest in peace. So on TMZ, Amber Heard countersues insurance company by saying, you do have to cover me. And I found this really interesting because as a person in the public eye, anyone has to, you know, at a certain point, everyone does have to get what I have referred to casually as like mouth insurance. But basically, you know, a lot of comedians have it. Kathy Griffin has it. You basically have $1 million or possibly more umbrella insurance policy that is to cover you from, like, you know, defamation or kind of like things that you say or things that you might be accused of, because it's a regular part of being a person in the public eye. Amber Heard says her $1 million insurance policy does, in fact, have to cover her in the Johnny Depp trial and verdict, and she's asking a judge to confirm it. The actress countersued New York Marine and General Insurance Company. Please tell me that's the one that Shaquille O'Neal does commercials for. I have no idea, but it sounds like it. Because it doesn't he say like the Marine, but it might be a different one.
It's the General.
Oh, the General. I was like, fuck, I really hope it's the Shaquille O'Neal one. Because there was a time when he was just doing, he would just did every commercial and we're like, Shaq, are you okay?
He still does. Did you see he's doing like the clumps now?
Oh, I go, how, like, what did you do with your money? Or are you just bored or?
No, here's the thing.
Oh, you know the scoop?
I do, actually. Shaq is a great businessman, like a legendary businessman. So anything he does an ad for, he is like, he's got a 5% stake in. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like him being a spokesperson for them means he gets a piece of that company. He's the largest owner of Papa John's franchises, which is why he's the face of Papa John's.
But he doesn't care that it's tacky. He just wants to keep making money.
I mean, people still eat Papa John's. Who cares?
I know. It's just like when you're one of the most like famous basketball players of all time, I wouldn't want to then like just start doing random insurance and Papa John's commercials.
Oh, it's not random. It's your business.
Well, we don't know. Everyone doesn't know the behind the scenes. Oh, okay. Like you. I mean, this makes me feel a little bit better for him. I was like either, you know, celebrities kind of notoriously fuck up their own funds. You know, people do it. So I thought either he gambled away his funds or, you know, lost it in some kind of like, domestic instance, or that he was just like a fun loving guy who got bored and had fun going on to commercial sets. Because I could also see that. He seems like a nice guy. I've seen footage of him like buying sneakers for kids and, you know, Foot Lockers and stuff. I mean, not that that's not completely curated, but
Shaq's a shark.
All right. So they wanted to talk about let me just start the sentence again. The actress countersued New York Marine and General Insurance Company after they first asked a judge to let him off the hook for a $1 million liability policy she'd taken out to protect from defamation claims. Their argument was based on the fact the jury found Amber's committed willful misconduct in her defamation of Johnny, and under California law, they say that gives them an out in having to fulfill the policy. In other words, they believe they're not responsible. In new court documents obtained by TMZ, Amber argues the exact opposite, namely that New York Marine promised to pay her defense costs and judgments against her up to $1 million no matter what. Which I think makes sense. That's the unconditional deal she claims they struck with her, and she says they haven't lived up to it on their end of the bargain. I mean, this just should be in writing. I guess the language is not clear enough. Amber Heard says that in trying to wipe their hands clean, they're turning their back on that agreement, including breach of contract, among other claims. Still, the fact that the insurance company pressed the issue now, she's met them on the field and asked the judge to require the insurer to pony up. I mean, I've heard of this happening, not with this kind of insurance, but certainly with like car insurance. I have a friend whose sister died in a car accident, and even if you have driver's insurance, the insurance company, if it has to go to court, you know, does show up, and the insurance company, like goes to court against you basically because they're still trying to have to pay you as little money as possible. And it's real fucking tacky, especially when like you die in that accident or someone you love dies in that accident. So the insurance company that you have paid monthly will go to court and they will, make different points. Like you weren't wearing your seatbelt. Maybe you didn't wait for the proper amount of time at the stop sign, whatever they can get to knock money off what they feel they have to pay you. And it's real fucked up. And I can't imagine having that as a career, but whatever. Hey, responsible adults over the age of 21 living in states where Delta 8 is legal. You know what I'm going to say. You know it. Say it with me. Do you want to get high? Do you want to get really high? Do you want to get really super duper legally high? Well, now's the time to go to yoDelta.com where you can stock up on high quality lab tested Delta 8. Listen, if I know anything about you guys, it's that you probably fucking hate your family, because apparently everyone but me hates their fucking family and does copious amounts of drugs when they go home for the holidays. So you're going to need to stock the fuck up, okay? Their vapes and gummies are great. All my friends fucking love them. And guess what? They fucking hate their families. So if you're over the age of 21 and living in the majority of states where this is legal, you're going to go to yoDelta.com and stock up on Delta 8. What's Delta 8? Still up for debate, but it's found in hemp and can be legally shipped to various states, and it gets you fucking high. At yoDelta.com, you can find a mix of gummies and vapes for all your getting stoned needs. And I can let you know that Delta 8 does work. I've seen it work. I've seen it work on my friends and people I know and colleagues and people I don't like, but I hope they are high so they stop bothering me, and that these products should be taken responsibly. So once more, that's yoDelta.com, the official Delta 8 sponsor of the GAS Digital Network, which is where this show lives. And if you use promo code GAS, that's G-A-S, you're going to get 25% off. Once more, that's promo code GAS for 25% off. YoDelta, home of the Delta 8 that will get you super fucking high. Back to the news. All right, next article. This is about an anti-woke law. I couldn't find this anywhere else in any of the conservative media outlets. I mean, not surprisingly, but this is from NPR. With a nod to 1984, a federal judge blocks Florida's anti-woke law in colleges. Again, this is just a very without a country topic, so I wanted to bring it up on the show. A federal judge in Florida, this is something that Fox was talking about a lot about a year ago. I went and searched the archives on Fox, but obviously their tactic is, you know, anytime something is beneficial to the right, they post about it a lot. And when there's not a good look for the right, they don't necessarily post. They don't like post like we lost. They just kind of like don't mention it again, which is like is a cool, fun way to handle it. A federal judge in Florida partially blocked a law championed by Governor Ron DeSantis. And of course, they don't want to make DeSantis look weak, especially right now. Designed to limit the discussion of racism and privilege in schools and workplace training. In a 139-page order issued Thursday, Tallahassee U.S. District Judge Mark Walker, what's that word? Say it, Mike.
Excoriated?
Are you guessing?
I mean, I'm taking it from Natalie, who I trust 100%.
God, why don't
from me, who is guessing?
Excoriate.
Yeah, excoriated. Okay, so criticized. I'm like, again, I can figure out what it means from context clues, but I've never said that. My vocabulary needs some work. Judge Mark Walker excoriated the Republican-led bill and blocked it from taking effect in the state's public universities. You guys know I don't know words, though. I use shit like 800 times in the book I wrote. The advice is still good, though. You don't need big words. The state of Florida's decision to choose which viewpoints are worthy of illumination and which must remain in the shadows has implications for us all, Walker wrote. But the First Amendment does not permit the state of Florida to muzzle its university professors, impose its own orthodoxy of viewpoints, and cast us all into the dark. The legislation, previously called the Stop WOKE Act, the acronym standing for Wrongs to Our Kids and Employees, kids always involved, is now known as the Individual Freedom Act. DeSantis signed the bill into law this spring. It initially took effect in July. The bill prohibits schools and workplaces from any instruction that suggests that any individual, by virtue of their race, color, sex, or national origin, bears responsibility for and must feel guilt, anguish, or other forms of psychological distress, which is interesting. Schools and workplaces from any instruction that suggests. I mean, I would also argue, though, that, like, I'm definitely around lots of, like, language that, you know, might suggest I should feel a certain way. that also doesn't mean that you have to feel that way. Like, we're all so fucking personally weak on account of historical acts of racism. Like, there's a way to acknowledge that something happened, that it was bad, that a group of people that were affected in a negative way that don't include you, without you then having to be like, I'm a bad person, because you weren't there yet. Like, anyway, this obviously much higher stakes here, I guess, if not if you have an eating disorder. But like, this makes me think of like when people say like, oh, we shouldn't have like thin models because then I'm going to feel bad about yourself. Like, take some personal like responsibility and ownership over your own mind and your own feelings. Like, it's not this rogue thing that you can't control. The bill also forbids education or training that says individuals are privileged or oppressed due to their race or sex. Very interesting. Okay. Critics say the bill is designed to prevent schools and workplaces from discussing racism. In August, I need to read what this bill is even fucking saying. This is a little unclear. In August,
super clear.
What exactly are they saying in the bill? Do you have the bill?
I will bring it up.
I'm sure it's like it's 139 pages, as they said. But in August, a group of 8 Florida professors sued representatives of the state's higher education system over the bill, calling the legislation racially motivated censorship aimed at stifling widespread demands to discuss, study, and address systemic inequalities. No, I mean, I want to know, like, in practice, what this means in the workplace or the college campus, like a concrete example, because this is all like theoretical examples. Critical race theory is a decades-old academic framework that examines how racism helped to shape institutions and traditions that exist today. Which, again, it's like, I think you can cover critical race theory, and even if the professor takes it upon himself to suggest that maybe white students in the class should feel a certain way, that you have to be able to decipher in a college setting or any academic setting or any, you know, pop culture setting, what is the person that is speaking's opinion and what is actually a fact or historical evidence or information. So critical race theory is a decades-old academic framework that examines how racism helped to shape institutions and traditions that exist today. The idea was once confined to law school seminars, but over the past 2 years, the term has become a catch-all shorthand for a variety of conservative bugaboos, workplace diversity trainings, protests over police brutality, and high school history lessons. I'd be so interested to be in a high school class today. DeSantis began pushing for the bill last December. In Florida, we are taking a stand against the state-sanctioned racism that is critical race theory, he said in a press release announcing the proposal. We won't allow Florida tax dollars to be spent teaching kids to hate our country or to hate each other. It seems like something that the fucking most teachers in Florida just like wouldn't do. There's not people watching you in the classroom most of the time. Like, you can kind of say you covered something and not really cover it. The bill is one of the most strident state legislature entries in the conservative culture wars over schools. Florida lawmakers passed it alongside the Parental Rights in Education Act, called the Don't Say Gay Bill by critics, which bans classroom instruction involving sexual orientation or gender identity in kindergarten through third grade. And we covered that a lot on this show. In his order, Judge Walker, an Obama appointee, opened by reciting the first sentence of 1984. Oh, and you know, the night before when he was like getting ready in his mirror, he was like, I'm going to fucking own them with this George Orwell quote. This is going to be fucking killer. I would have loved to see that. I love when people prepare a speech that they think is going to be like very groundbreaking, and then they deliver it. And especially when it falls on, you know, kind of like tepid applause or tepid response. Love that. So he opened by reciting the first sentence of 1984, George Orwell's novel about life under a futuristic totalitarian government. It was a bright, cold day in April, and the clocks were striking 13, and the powers in charge of Florida's public university system have declared the state has unfettered authority to muzzle its professors in the name of freedom, in quotes. The judge wrote, "This is positively dystopian." Thursday's ruling is the second legal setback for the law. An August ruling, also by Walker, blocked another part of the bill that targeted workplace diversity practices. The law faces another challenge by K through 12 teachers. DeSantis's office is expected to appeal the decision. And I think, like, you know, it's interesting when Republicans, like, present bills of this nature because they are so into freedom of speech. So it's like, okay, well, they're introducing like something else that they want to talk about. They're not saying that you can't talk about something. So that's why it's a little bit difficult when it's like, okay, well, are you free speech? But it doesn't seem like they are. Like they're saying, oh, you can't talk about critical race theory. And then I think it's up to us as the recipients of the information, you know, and college students or high school students or whoever it is, to take in the information and then say, how do I feel about that? I mean, since I was a little kid, whether I was in church, I was hearing a speech, I was at school, I heard everything people were saying. That didn't just mean I was like, oh, that must be true. I'm going to take that as a fact and keep it with me. Like, you should always be questioning everything, whether it's from someone on your level, an authority figure, a school, the government. Like, to just take in information or to just have someone say, you're guilty because of this, or you should feel bad because of this, just to take that in without questioning it, that seems to me like a you problem. Yes.
Yeah, but you're also a comic, right? Like,
I wasn't a comic when I was six.
I understand that, but you had the brain to like, think critically and process that. Most people, myself included, never questioned a teacher until like eighth grade.
Yeah, but that's crazy. And I mean, and that is also me like questioning. I mean, like, I don't want to, this is like kind of like a Republican-y to be like, it starts at home. But I mean, you know, and we would never teach this in schools because that would give that would make, you know, people not be able to be controlled by society and school. You would never teach critical thinking in a real way because that would make too many rebels and groundbreakers. It would not be good for the functioning of society as it currently is. But if I had a school, and I'm not starting one, I'm not Oprah. If I had a school, I certainly would teach that. That's the number one most important thing that I would teach. You know, I've never used geometry. And when I have, I've fucked it up and ordered the wrong size couch. But I use critical thinking every day. Cause so it's like, you know, I'm not like, obviously I don't fucking know words. It's not like I'm some kind of a genius, but as far as like critical thinking or speaking out for myself, those are the places where I shine. And that gets you a lot farther than just knowing how to answer SAT questions.
Yeah. But I mean, I think this bill, right, is for the majority of people who are not critical thinkers, who do not question authority. Right. And if you're being told that mm-hmm. you are the problem, you bear the weight of every person who's come before you who disenfranchised a certain group of people.
That's why I wanted to see how they, like, I wanted to see a little bit more, like, what they specifically meant in practice. Like, can you pull up, like a curriculum from a Florida school that involves critical race theory? Or is it not in Florida school systems yet because it keeps getting blocked?
I don't know. I just looked at I actually pulled up the bill and like read the front page of it, like what this law plans to hit.
Which I think we talked about a little bit, but I mean, you know, there's so much text that we cover on the show that I would never be able to recall it.
Fair enough. But yeah, I mean, like they're hammering home like principles of individual freedom, right? And I looked up what that means and it's just, you know, the right to make decisions and actions that are your own.
Right.
Well, that have no basis in, you know.
Well, I mean, they don't want, no one on either side, I think, really wants us making decisions for our own. Because to call it dystopian, okay, where there's great suffering or injustice. Like, I'm just a little curious about, like, yeah, because it's like, yes, obviously, I don't agree with the part of culture that tells you that you're bad just for existing as a white person. I don't agree with that. But I certainly think that it's fine to teach critical race theory without this like emotional bias, just to say that these things have happened historically and that certain organizations, were created, for instance, police, and the historical roots in their inception lie in racism. I think like things like that are important to know. And you don't need to put all this extra stuff in it. But what I also think is that, like, it really is, like, kind of pathetic and sad that you're not able to filter that out on your own. And that makes me sad for culture. I mean, that was something I was sad about to begin with. And I mean, you know, kind of a big part of this show is just a reminder to think more critically and not just, like, go along with something because your liberal news source posted it or because your conservative news source posted it. Actually read something, take it in, say, what does this mean? Am I okay with this? How do I think? What are my morals? What's my personal Bible?
But can you ask a six-year-old to do that?
I think you can start training them to. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think that, I think what people are capable of, when they're like, when you really sit down and ask, like, I mean, I think one of the most important questions you can ask a young person is, what do you think? And I always used to ask kids like that when I was like doing Big Brother's Big Sister's Hero, or when I was working at the daycare center. And like the kids fucking love me because I treated them like regular people. Like, yeah, I'm not going to be like, do you have a boo-boo? But I'm going to be like, wow, why'd you call her a bitch? That was dumb. I didn't put the dumb though. I let them tell me why they did it. I wouldn't call them dumb, but I was like, why did you call her a bitch? And I'd be like, because she was acting like a bitch. And I'd be like, you know what, sometimes people do act like bitches, but in a functioning society we can't always call people a bitch out loud because that makes us look bad. And they got it. I think they really got it. All right, let me look at the time. What do we have left? All right, so Trump's back on Twitter. Not a lot that we need to talk about there, but I mean, if you've been on Twitter lately, Elon Musk, I gotta say, like, I wasn't like, oh my God, I'm leaving Twitter if Elon Musk takes over, because I don't like hate Elon Musk, or I didn't. But now I gotta say, I like really love Twitter. It's my favorite social media platform. I've had a lot of fun on there. I work on my jokes a lot there. I love it. And it's Twitter kind of sucks now, and it's really upsetting me. You can't tell, like, even more so than usual, what is real, what's not. The parodies are funny, but at a certain point, that's going to grow old. I just wake up every morning, even with like, and just lose 100 followers a day for having done nothing, which I'm guessing is some kind of a tactic they're employing to make people pay for the blue check mark. Cause I have like just like the, you know, person in media one. But I'm sure, because I'm not the only one who's experienced that. I saw Josh Gondelman, who has a really, really big Twitter follower, saying that he's just lost like 4,000 followers since Elon Musk took over. And then Kathy Griffin's back on, but he took Kathy Griffin off for a while for like parodying him, even though she made it clear it was a parody account and she was the biggest celebrity following me. And I was like, how are you going to do me like that, Elon? I don't know. The whole thing's kind of a mess. And I think we're just really seeing like what a child he is. I mean, listen, it's a company that can be bought. So whatever. But I'm just like overall kind of like not too jazzed about it, because I really, really love Twitter, and it's just like more sad than anything. Also, a lot of people like kind of, you know, make their living off of Twitter, whether that's like how they share their writing or that's how they sell tickets to their shows. So it just kind of sucks overall. I'm just kind of sad about it. So we'll see. According to the astrology of Marin Altman, who is one of my favorite Instagram astrologers, though, things will pick up on Twitter towards the end of the year. So fingers crossed. We'll see. Kind of closing out the midterm elections thing. If you go to the Washington Post, it kind of talks about who was elected during the midterms. And give some interesting stats on, you know, the House and the Senate, and how a big portion of people who were elected, or not a big portion, but 12 elected officials who are new to politics have no previous government experience, which seems scary. But I guess in a numbers game, it's okay. You got to start somewhere. 17 new members are in their 20s or 30s. What?
I get hype whenever I find out people with no government experience are in government.
It's polarizing for me, because it's like, you know, I do see value in youth. I also see value in age. And I think people who think that things should completely be run by young people are stupid. But also, I do agree that things that are completely run by old people who are in the system and have been corrupted by it are also stupid. But yeah. But the majority are still in their 40s and 50s, which I think is good. When I think about, like, what age do I want running something, I'm thinking 40s, maybe 50s. Those, to me, I'm like, that not 20s. 20s is crazy. Do you know anyone in their 20s? Do you know anyone in their 20s who are like, they should run something? I fucking certainly don't. And even 30s, I'm like, it depends. It depends. I think 40s is like good. I think 40s is like not old at all. And that's our judgment for us thinking that being in your 40s is old. It seemed like you were going to say something, so I just took a sip of water. But
no, I couldn't agree more. 40 is the ideal number.
That's it. Like,
you still have stake in the game. For what your individual future is going to look like, but you have lived long enough to have experience and probably a family you want to build a better future for.
Right. Well, I mean, but you also don't need that. I think what you really need to be a good politician and a good human is empathy. And no matter how amazing you are in your 20s, people in their 20s lack empathy. I lacked empathy in my 20s. It's part of being in your 20s. You need to go through the shit you go through in your 20s to learn the amount of empathy you need to be a leader or a parent or whatever it is that you want to do with your life. Okay. One more girl story, and then we'll head on to our main story. Elizabeth Holmes. I hadn't thought about her. And then all of a sudden I was like, fuck, this lady was sentenced to 11 years. A lot of time. Holy shit. This is from the New York Times. Elizabeth Holmes is sentenced to more than 11 years for fraud. Ms. Holmes was convicted in January of 4 counts of fraud for deceiving investors with claims about her blood testing startup Theranos. Again, if you didn't watch this movie, the documentary one, I believe is the good one. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, the documentary one. Not. I mean, I didn't watch the other one. And that could be good, too. Elizabeth Holmes, the founder of the failed blood testing startup Theranos, also a fun name for like an improv team, was sentenced to more than 11 years in prison on Friday for defrauding investors about her company's technology and business dealings. The sentence capped a years-long saga that has captivated the public and ignited debates about Silicon Valley's culture of hype and exaggeration. I mean, insert comedy there too. Ms. Holmes, who raised $945 million for Theranos and promised that the startup would revolutionize healthcare. I'm just thinking about the documentary. There's so many laugh out loud moments. It's just like, she basically just like made a machine that like shakes blood. And then so many people bought it. Like, pharmacies. Okay, this is really funny. It's not funny for the people who thought their like diseases were going to be cured, but it's hilarious for the companies that bought it. I don't feel bad for them at all. Who raised $945 million for Theranos and promised that the startup would revolutionize healthcare with tests that require just a few drops of blood, was convicted in January of 4 counts of fraud for deceiving investors with those claims, which turned out not to be true. Judge Edward J. Davila of the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California sentenced Ms. Holmes to 135 months in prison, which is slightly more than 11 years, followed by 3 years of supervised release. Ms. Holmes, 38, who plans to appeal, must surrender to custody on April 27th, 2023. In the courtroom on Friday, Ms. Holmes, who appeared with a large group of friends and family, including her parents and her partner, Billy Evans, who is a fucking smoke show, unless that picture was deceiving, cried when she read, oh, that's not a cute, I saw like a way more, he's still handsome like for her, but he's not as handsome in that photo.
Dude is a knockout.
Are you that not in that photo?
That guy with his full head of hair and piercing blue eyes.
Okay. He spiked it up because it's actually thinning on the sides, Mike.
Whatever. It's flowing in the wind.
Wait, who's your number one male celebrity crush?
I mean, come on. We don't have the time. probably Hemsworth.
Oh, okay. I was just like, I mean, I don't know. I feel like you have a pretty good read on like if people are hot or not. I'm just basing that off of your previous crush on me, really. Cried when she read a statement.
Hot fiance.
What?
I said, what about my current hot fiance? Yeah. Also, this guy's beard game. Sick.
Yeah. 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 I saw a profile of him, so he might have like a strong like nose and jaw, which I really go for. Well, I do. I mean, I love a fucking Adrian Brody nose, though. All right. Cried when she saw read a statement to the judge. I am devastated by my failings, she said. I have felt deep pain for what people went through because I failed them. I mean, but you didn't even ever think that you had the answer, girlfriend. Ms. Holmes, who has a 1-year-old son and is pregnant with her second child. Sucks. Apologize to the investors, patients, and employees of Theranos. That's going to be another experiment gone wrong. She said she had tried to realize her dream too quickly and do too many things at once. I really love that she's still trying to convince us that she ever thought she could actually do this. This is like when, again, this is like when OJ convinced himself he didn't do it. She ended with a quotation from the poet Rumi and a promise to do good in the world in the future. You know your life's in shambles when you start quoting Rumi. Though federal sentencing guidelines for wire fraud of the size that Ms. Holmes was convicted of recommend a maximum of 20 years in prison, she's a girl. No, it doesn't say that. A probation officer assigned to the case proposed 9 years. Her lawyers had asked for just 18 months of house arrest, while prosecutors sought 15 years and $804 million in restitution for 29 investors. Prosecutors had urged Judge Davila to consider the message that her case would send to the world. In court filings, they wrote that a long sentence for Ms. Holmes was important to deter future startup fraud schemes. I mean, I do agree with that. And rebuild the trust investors must have when funding innovators. Nah, I don't care about that. Jeffrey Cohen, an associate professor at Boston College Law School and a former federal prosecutor, said it was somewhat surprising for a sentence to go beyond a probation report's recommendation, but the high-profile nature of Ms. Holmes's case had made it a symbol. Yeah, she's like pretty much a celebrity now. The sentence also showed that courts take fraud seriously, he added. We rarely see these kinds of prosecutions, he said. Ms. Holmes's case has taken an almost mythic status among white-collar crimes. Few startup founders reached the level of prominence that she did, appearing on magazine covers, exactly, dining at the White House, and hitting a paper net worth of $4.5 billion. Since Theranos' fraud was exposed in 2015, Ms. Holmes' story has been told in podcasts, TV shows, books, and documentaries. She's a star, baby. Exaggeration and hype are common among tech startups, but very few executives are indicted on fraud charges, let alone convicted and sent to prison. That trend may be changing, as the Justice Department has said it plans to be more aggressive in its pursuit of white-collar criminals. In October, Trevor Milton, the founder of the electric vehicle company Nikola, was convicted of fraud, and Sam Bankman-Fried, the founder of the cryptocurrency exchange FTX, which collapsed in bankruptcy last week, is under multiple state and federal investigations. The article goes on, but I think that's all we really need to know for now. It also just sucks that she has like a young kid and a kid on the way. Like, so she's pregnant. I don't know how pregnant she is. I mean, is she going to give birth in prison? That sucks. Although Gossip Girl star Leighton Meester was birthed in prison, and look how well she's doing. So you know what? Sometimes if you start at rock bottom, the only place you have to go is up. all right. Last story, main story of the week, our conservative liberal story, is the shooting in the gay club in Colorado. We all heard about it. The conservative article is from The Hill, what we know about Colorado Springs nightclub shooting suspect. Authorities have named, I'm not naming him, we don't name shooters anymore, it's a 22-year-old dude, as the lone suspect in a deadly shooting at a gay nightclub in Colorado Springs, Colorado, on Saturday night that left 5 people dead and at least 25 people injured. So I'm just pulling up a picture of him before I make any comments. Is there? I like, they take them on Facebook and shit. Ew. Sorry, that was rude. That's probably, reactions like that are probably why he shot up the gay club. That was rude of me. Fuck him though.
You're part of the problem.
Yeah, I'm part of the problem. I know how based in looks the male gay community is, and that's definitely why he shot up the club. Fuck. Police recovered No, I think he's being charged with hate crime. So I'm guessing maybe he's not gay. Maybe he's struggling with his sexuality. Let's figure it out. Police recovered a long gun and a handgun from Club Q, a popular gay and lesbian bar in Colorado Springs. The New York Times reported that the suspect fired an AR-15 style rifle and was wearing body armor. I mean, get a door guy, Club Q. The Colorado Springs mayor said a nightclub patron grabbed the handgun from Guy, who was then subdued by at least two patrons. Police are still trying to piece together a motive and additional details about the suspect who is being treated for his injuries at a local hospital. But some information has surfaced about him. In June 2021, a man with the same name and age was arrested for making a bomb threat to a suburban neighborhood in Southeast Colorado Springs, according to the Gazette, a local newspaper. The shooter's mother told police her son threatened her with a homemade bomb and other weapons. Okay, so, and then what'd you do? The El Paso County Sheriff's Office evacuated the neighborhood and shut the area down until the shooter came out of a house that he was in. The shooter was charged with 2 counts of felony menacing and 3 counts of first-degree kidnapping, but the charges were later dropped and the records were sealed. Colorado Governor Jared Polis said all indications were that it was the same person. The incident raised, I love local reporting. We don't know. The incident raised questions about Colorado's red flag law, which empowers authorities to temporarily seize firearms from an individual determined as a potential threat to the community. Yeah, no shit. The shooter's mother, Laura Vopel, they don't have the same last name, so it's fine, was living at home in the Colorado Springs neighborhood until the June 2021 incident when she was asked to move out, according to the New York Times. The shooter may have been staying nearby at his grandparents' house. Shooters love staying with their grandparents. What is it about that? I guess it's because the parents gave up and grandparents are like are always like a little bit more sympathetic to the situation because they're like, oh, I feel bad. I fucked up his parents. Maybe that's why. Facebook posts shared on Laura Vopel's page show that the shooter's grandfather is Randy Vopel, a Republican state lawmaker in the California State Assembly, who compared the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol to the Revolutionary War. Huh. Almost like it runs in the family. Randy Vopel lost his seat to a challenger in the midterm elections. Fuck that guy. I hate anyone giving a bad name to Randy's everywhere. Shout out to my dad. So that's the coverage from The Hill. Kind of just like very, very factual. I think questioning the red flag laws is good. I mean, why did someone who was already like, you know, you see trouble brewing here. Or he already brewed the trouble. How does he get his hands on an AR-15? And then the liberal take is from NPR. The gay club shooting suspect evaded Colorado's red flag gun law. And I specifically chose this one because, you know, liberal news sources, anytime it's anytime it's a shooting, they like to make it about gun laws, which I think liberals are already for the most part all on board with like the anti-gun stuff. So I think if we want to bring more people to care about the obvious mass shooting problem that we have in America, we got to stop making about gun laws. We have to maybe talk about mental health or something else. We have to go at it from another angle. But I felt it was very interesting that they specifically chose that language for the title. So a year and a half before he was arrested in the Colorado Springs gay nightclub shooting that left 5 people dead, the shooter allegedly threatened his mother with a homemade bomb, forcing neighbors and surrounding homes to evacuate while the bomb squad and crisis negotiators talked him into surrendering. Yet despite that scare, there's no public record that prosecutors moved forward with felony kidnapping and menacing charges against the shooter, or that police or relatives tried to trigger Colorado's red flag law that would have allowed authorities to seize the weapons and ammo the man's mother says he had with him. And it's interesting because now knowing what we know from the Hill article, I'm guessing if these were just sealed, that his grandfather had something to do with getting him out of that trouble. Gun control advocates say that the shooter's June 2021 threat is an example of a red flag law ignored with potentially deadly consequences. While it's not clear the law could have prevented Saturday night's attack, such gun seizures can be in effect for as little as 14 days and be extended by a judge in six-month increments. They say it could have at least slowed the shooter and raised his profile with law enforcement. We need heroes beforehand, parents, coworkers, friends who are seeing someone go down this path, said Colorado State Representative Tom Sullivan, whose son was killed in the Aurora Theater shooting and sponsored the state's red flag law passed in 2019. Oh, God. Yeah, of course. I'm not even thinking. This is yet another incident in Colorado. Again, there's what is in the water in Colorado? Please, if anyone's from Colorado, please call me and tell me what's in the water. Email us at withoutacountrypodcast@gmail.com. It's the same. It's like I know we talk about like Texas and states like that a lot more. But when we see these kind of like lone people doing wild things, it's consistently Colorado. And then I'm going to give runner up to Ohio based on my own personal experiences. This should have alerted them, put them on their radar. But the law that allows guns to be removed from people deemed dangerous to themselves or others has seldom been used in the state, particularly in El Paso County, home to Colorado Springs, where the 22-year-old shooter allegedly went into Club Q with a long gun at just before midnight and opened fire before he was subdued by patrons. An Associated Press analysis found Colorado has one of the lowest rates of red flag usage despite widespread gun ownership and several high-profile mass shootings. I mean, that's what you think of when you think of Colorado now. Courts issued 151 gun surrender orders from when the law took effect in April 2019 through 2021, three surrender orders for every 100,000 adults in the state. That's a third of the ratio of orders issued for the 19 states and District of Columbia with surrender laws on their books. El Paso County appears especially hostile to the law. It joined nearly 2,000 counties nationwide in declaring themselves Second Amendment sanctuaries that protect the constitutional right to bear arms, passing a 2019 resolution that says the red flag law infringes upon the inalienable rights of law-abiding citizens by ordering police to forcibly enter premises and seize a citizen's property with no evidence of a crime. County Sheriff Bill Elder has said his office would wait for family members to ask a court for surrender orders and not petition for them on its own accord unless there were exigent circumstances and probable cause of a crime. El Paso County, with a population of 730,000 people, had 13 temporary firearm removals through the end of last year, four of which turned into longer ones of at least 6 months. The county sheriff's office declined to answer what happened after the shooter's arrest last year, including whether anyone asked to have his weapons removed. The press, yeah, there's some political shit going on here. The press release issued by the sheriff's office at the time said no explosives were found, but did not mention anything about whether any weapons were recovered. Spokesperson Lieutenant Deborah Minot referred further questions about the case to the district attorney's office. An online court records search did not turn up any formal charges against the shooter in last year's case. And in an update on the story on the bomb threat, the Gazette newspaper of Colorado Springs reported that prosecutors did not pursue any charges in the case and that records were sealed. The Gazette also reported that it got a call from the shooter in August asking that it remove a story about the incident. Yo, I'm trying to get a date, and like she Googled me and she saw that Gazette article about how I put in a bomb threat. There is absolutely nothing there. The case was dropped, and I'm asking you either remove or update the story, the shooter said in a voice message to an editor. The entire case was dismissed. A spokesperson, and probably because of, you know, several cases that we saw go to court, including like the New York Times case with the they were afraid of getting sued and a small publication can't go through that. A spokesperson for the district attorney's office, Howard Black, declined to comment on whether any charges were pursued. He said the shooting investigation will also include a study of the bomb threat. There will be no additional information released at this time, Black said. There are still investigative questions. AP said of 19 states and the District of Columbia with red flag laws on their books found that they have been used about 15,000 times since 2020, less than 10 times for every 100,000 adults in each state. Experts called that woefully low and hardly enough to make a dent in gun killings. Just this year, authorities in Highland Park, Illinois, were criticized for not trying to take guns away from the 21-year-old accused of a 4th of July parade shooting that left seven dead. Well, I mean, also here, guys, like, do we not see the other pattern? It's not just guns. It's like young men. And I'm not even like saying that like with a pointing finger attitude. I'm saying like, I know young men. Young men don't know how to properly emote. I mean, I know men in their 30s and 40s who I don't know if I've ever seen emote. So I think also, let's take care of that. Police had been alerted about him in 2019 after he threatened to, quote, kill everyone in his home. Huh, I think something's wrong with Jake. Duke University sociologist Jeffrey Swanson, an expert in red flag laws, said the Colorado Springs case could be yet another missed warning sign. This seems like a no-brainer. If the mom knew he had guns, he said, if you removed firearms from the situation, you could have had a different ending to the story. Yeah, and I mean, if he had a better childhood and nothing ever bad ever, I mean, like, there's a lot of things here. I agree, guns are a problem, but I just think it's going to be a losing battle if that's all we talk about from the liberal standpoint. Anyway, that's the main story. Try not to get murdered in your family home on Thanksgiving. Hide the firearms from your drunk uncle. And be safe. Love you. Buy tickets to the New Year's Eve show at New York Comedy Club East Village. When those go up, I'll post about it on my Instagram. Follow me on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter at PhilanthropyGal. And if you know a young man in your life who seems like he's struggling with his emotions, give him a hug. Just give him a hug this Thanksgiving. All right. Take care. Bye.